AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires. Your journey, our passion.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy, episode 317 for January 29 of 2016. It's a fun day with Hyundai and an Elantra on the beach. Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLine.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific or 20 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. The surf, the sun, the sand. This is not our typical AutoLine After Hours. We're out in Imperial Beach, California, just south of San Diego. In fact, just barely above the Mexican border. And, of course, Gary and I right now have got Dave Zukowski, the CEO of Hyundai Motor America. And it's great having you here to talk all about what's going on with Hyundai.
It's great, great to be here, I can tell you that. But, no, it's exciting times for us. We're down here to launch our all-new 2017 Elantra, and we're very, very excited about it.
Sixth generation of this car.
Sixth generation. We've sold over 2.5 million in our history, so it's a very, very important car for us.
Mm-hmm. So you wrapped up a pretty good 2015. What's your outlook for 2016?
Yeah, 15 was good. We did about 761,000, up about 5% year over year. It was our sixth consecutive year of record sales, so we're still growing. This year we're looking at a 3% increase. What's going to change a little bit this year?
Because most everyone's saying the market will grow 1 or 2%, so you think you're going to do better.
We're a little bit more bullish there, and for us, it's because we've been a victim of adverse mix for several years now, where the industry's up 6% last year, trucks were up 12%, cars were down 2%, and 80% of our volume comes in contracting segments. So it really was a struggle for us, and this year we've got three great new products that we're launching. And more importantly, on the truck side, the crossover side, we're going to get significant increases in Tucson production and significant increases in Santa Fe Sport production. So the combination of an all-new Elantra, where we introduced the G90, the replacement for the Genesis or the Equus in Detroit, we've got that coming mid-year, and then we've got our dedicated platform electric vehicle coming towards the end of the year. So a lot of new crossovers and three new important products for us.
So is the crossover where you see the biggest strength for you guys going forward?
It hasn't been looking backward, for sure, but going forward, absolutely. We have significantly underperformed in those segments. They've represented incredible growth, really, for the industry, and we just haven't participated in that growth. So our share has almost been cut in half in the last 5 years. So like I said, we sell about 22-23% truck mix. Mm-hmm. The industry is 58%.
Wow.
So we're really out of balance there. And this year, we think between Tucson and Santa Fe Sport, we can pick up another 100,000 crossovers, which gets us to maybe 33% truck mix. It's going the right way, mm-hmm. but it's at least we're swimming with the current.
761,000, that's a big number. I'm sure they're telling you, Dave, when you're going to break a million.
Never big enough. Yeah, it's aspirational,
it's
for sure.
It's not that far away. I mean, I don't mean to trivialize it, but yeah. Far away.
Yeah, and of course we realize, you know, we've done it before in the past and we talked about it. Volkswagen's talked about 800,000 in recent records, so we're not going to talk about anything publicly. But absolutely, we want to keep growing. But if you add 3% onto what we did last year, it gets you over 780,000. So you're getting close. And if you can get the capacity right, the mix right, and the capacity right, it's just a matter of time. We're in no hurry. We want to grow the right way, grow the healthy way. And obviously, that's an aspiration for us.
So, how do you see the category that the Elantra is going to compete in? It's a pretty tough area.
Fiercely competitive. So, what we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years in this shift from cars to trucks, specifically at a crossovers, the segment that's really gotten hurt has been midsize. Compact segment has pretty much held its own, and we see that it's going to be up 1-1.5% next year, but incredibly competitive. You've got new GM products, you've got new Honda products, you've got the new Elantra, and they're great products. There's some really good choices for consumers, so it's a critically important segment for us. That's about as competitive as you get in the segment, so there's no laydowns. It's going to be a tough fight.
So what's happened to midsize? I mean, your Sonata was down last year.
Yeah, Sonata was down a little bit. We actually gained share. We held our own in a contracting segment. What we're seeing is a movement from midsize to compact CUV. So, and it's not really gas related. So people say truck.
No, it's a global move. Yeah. It's not just, you know, here where gas prices are super
and it's
down.
Really less about fuel economy than it is about I've now got a vehicle that I sit higher on, I feel a little bit safer in, it's more versatile, it's more functional, I can get it in all-wheel drive if I want, it's got beautiful styling now that it's no longer body on frame, it's unibody, you got great fuel economy, great styling, so there's just no compromises, and it's about the same price, about the same payment, so you're seeing a lot of that movement really last year. RAV4 and CRV were outselling Accord and Camry, which just never happened before. And it's consumer driven and it's great products. And we don't really see that changing. You might see some of the growth in the full size pickup and the body on frame SUVs. You know, when gas prices go back up, which they inevitably will, that may soften a little bit. But we don't really see any softening coming in crossovers. We see room in the B segment CUV. That's, you know, so now compact buyers may start migrating to B segment CUVs for the same reason that midsize went to compact CUVs. So we think we see continued growth there. Total truck will probably cap out somewhere between 58% and 60% of the market, which is a lot higher than anybody ever expected.
Ever.
Now, you guys don't play in the light-duty pickup market. Last year in Detroit, you showed a concept that had a bet on it.
Right.
Are you thinking about this?
Oh, absolutely. Very seriously. We've done a lot of work on it since Detroit of last year. We've got a lot of engineering resources thrown against it right now. We like the segment. We think it's a bit of white space. We call it an open bed utility. It's not intended to be a truck. It's not going to be seen off-road. It's not going to be seen on construction sites. We think there's a lot of people that buy pickups for two or three times a year that they might need to use them. And we think this type of vehicle with a lot of functionality, bed extender, tonneau cover, that can fit the needs of a lot of those people. We've done a tremendous amount of research on here. To be honest with you, this is strictly a U.S. driven process.
I was going to say, you're going to have to build it here, right?
Yeah, not necessarily. That hadn't been decided yet. But it's in terms of trying to justify and rationalize the volume there and the segment there, our parent company hasn't really seen it. So we've gone out on our own and we've done a tremendous amount of research with consumers that have bought trucks, that have bought Avalanches, that have bought vehicles like that, and figured out what they liked, what they didn't like. And we really think executed right, beautifully styled, functional, great fuel economy, priced properly, that there is a segment there.
Mm-hmm. So does the new Ridgeline give more purpose to this?
Not really. Ridgeline has gone more the traditional pickup route, okay. And we're not trying to go there at all. It's really a different concept altogether. A lot have tried it. We had a lot of people talking about Bajas and things like that when we first showed it in Detroit. But we think it's white space that nobody really has captured. And we don't have, it's not like when Ford comes out with a new entry and they need to get 500,000 units out of it. We don't need that. If we can find 50,000 units in a segment, that's pretty good and we can justify an investment based on that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we think there's enough people that are looking for something like that, and it sort of fits our DNA. It's exciting. So we're getting close. We're getting a lot closer to that.
Okay, at the opposite end of the scale, you mentioned it yourself, the pure electric car that's coming in, the Ioniq.
Right.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, timing is not sensational, right, based on fuel prices. So the dealers sometimes will look at you and scratch their heads as you tell them about this great cadence of alternative fuel vehicles we got coming, and they're sitting there going, but there's no natural demand right now.
I know, but the law says you got to do it anyway.
The law says you got to do it, and the products are phenomenal. And this is our first dedicated platform. It's pure battery electric, it's plug-in, and it's hybrid. We'll be building it in the third quarter, bringing it out in late fourth quarter of this year. Very, very important, beautifully styled, great range, better fuel economy than Prius. Really, really uniquely Hyundai in the way we go to market with this. And it's important for us because you look at Nissan and they've tried to own electric, and obviously Prius owns hybrid. And we're later to the party than some, but we think we're coming pretty well-dressed.
Mm-hmm. So are all three types going to be available at the same time, or are you going to have a cadence to that?
They'll be staggered. The plug-in will be the last. I think the battery electric is first, followed, I think, 30 to 45 days later by the HEV. But the last will be the plug-in, which is, I think, like 6 months later.
So has the Bolt changed any of your thinking in terms of the electric?
No. I mean, they've done a nice job with it, for sure. We just recently did some research for the Ioniq, and we had Prius there, we had Volt there, we had Leaf there, we had everybody there, and we did it in California. And styling-wise, the Volt, and we do it in like three stages. We show the vehicles badged in this case, and then we show them with, you know, with content, with what you get, and then we finally finish up with price. And Volt did very well from a styling standpoint. It was probably the highest ranked. And then when you start showing content and then price, the desire sort of falls off a little bit for Volt. And our vehicle was behind Volt in terms of the exterior styling. It's not as dramatically styled as that. But once you get into content, once you get into price, its results really picked up as we went along. So we think the more exposure you get, we know it's a tough segment. Prius owns that segment. If you look at registrations around the country, it's Prius and then everybody else. And that's really been only the success amongst the alternative fuel vehicles. So we know it's difficult. We know we're going to have to spend some marketing dollars to establish ourselves in that segment, and we're prepared to do that.
And the pure electric one, the Bolt, has that changed the equation? You know, 200-mile range.
Yeah, it remains to be seen, but I think it may. I think when right now in the short term, and we're different than many others, is we've been a leader in fuel cell, hydrogen fuel cell, and we believe that may be the technology of the future. The infrastructure is just not there right now to support it, and in the meantime, to avoid range anxiety, we thought plug-in is a really good alternative, not just our plug-in, but anybody's plug-in to do that. But now Bolt changes it. When you get 200-plus, it sort of changes consumer behavior, and we'll see how that works out. But it's relatively affordable, and it's got... I've always thought that if we want alternative fuel vehicles to become mainstream, which everybody wants, they're going to have to be priced about the same as an internal combustion engine. They're going to have about the same range, and they're going to have to have about the same refueling time and same convenience, right? So when you can get those three lined up, you're going to have a mainstream vehicle, and we're getting closer to that with 200-plus miles.
Well, I think the Tucson fuel cell that you have is a pretty compelling case in terms of the refueling time. You guys have a heck of a lease deal on
right.
that. I mean, it's just...
Yeah,
if I live in California, I mean, I'd be all over that.
And and driving it, you wouldn't know you're driving a hydrogen vehicle. It's just amazing. The problem in California has been it's a crawl before you walk before you run. The infrastructure, the refueling stations aren't there. We've got a tremendous amount of demand, and we really have to screen each of the applicants, and we've got to ask them, where do you live and their proximity to refueling stations and what are your driving patterns and things like that. And you almost have to qualify.
But even so, your numbers show that you got way more qualified people than you got cars to give them.
Exactly. So what's happening now, and it's happening really quickly, is they are in California anyway, and that's only part of the problem. But in California anyway, we launched with 7 refueling stations in Southern California only. And right now, I think we've got 14 that are operational. Mm-hmm. By the end of 2016, that number is going to be up towards the high 30s, low 40s. And we've connected Northern California with Southern California. Mm-hmm. So that changes the equation. Mm-hmm. You know, when you can cover the state and you've got places midway where you can refuel, things start changing. So, and of course, we've got competition now with Mirai coming out and others on the way.
But that's good, right?
It's
just going to make more people interested in hydrogen.
It builds credibility in what you're doing.
It's tough building, being a trailblazer here, because you're out there all alone. So actually it builds demand, it builds awareness, and it's really difficult if you think about investing upwards of $1.5 million in a refueling station for hydrogen, and you've only got one manufacturer that's out there selling vehicles on a, you know, chicken or the egg,
right.
So we're excited about it. We think it's great, but we're not limiting ourselves. We think plug-in has a place. We think battery electric has a place and hybrid has a place. I'm not sure that there's a single solution. I think you have to cover the waterfront on all regards.
Yeah.
So now that Hyundai is the official car company of the NFL and you guys will be undoubtedly advertising at the Super Bowl, how are you going to position Hyundai to America?
Well, the NFL gives us a beautiful demographic and a ton of people who are very passionate about football, and we're very passionate about our brand, and we think it's a great platform to deliver our brand to a lot of people. The one thing that we struggle with more than anything else, and a lot of it just comes from time, we celebrate next month, February 12th, I think, our 30th anniversary in the United States. And that's great. I mean, we've obviously made a lot of movements and stuff, but the Japanese have been here over 50 years. The domestics have been here over 100 years. And some of this awareness and consideration just comes with time. Mm-hmm. And we think one of the great ways to accelerate that is to leverage big platforms. We've got we just announced last week that we're going to go to Riviera and replace Northern Trust as a sponsor of the LA PGA Tour event. And that's a particularly good platform for our premium products. In the NFL, we think, is a particularly good platform for our mainstream Hyundai product. So we've got a strategy, and we're executing the strategy. And this is trying big voices in big places is something that really put us on the map back in 2009. And we're really evolving that into the biggest of all possible places. We're going to be really big in the Super Bowl. We're going to be really big in the NFL. We've got a very big presence in college football as well. So it's a transition that is really important for a brand as we get to the masses.
Mm-hmm. How much of this advertising spend goes to Genesis? Now you got to create a whole new brand that too.
Yeah, it'll be this isn't going to happen overnight. Genesis and for us, for example, I would say less than 10% of our total advertising spend was dedicated to Genesis last year. We follow, and Genesis has been wildly successful.
But that's been as a couple of models of cars. Now you want to have it as your luxury brand.
So this year we replace. Last year with Genesis and Equus, it was about 10% of our advertising budget. Now we're going to roll out a brand, right? And it's going to start with G90, and then the Genesis sedan is going to be renamed the G80 this summer. And then we're going to come with a all-new BMW 3 Series Fighter next year, which will be the first new edition. And then over between now and 2020, we'll have a total of 6 products, 3 of them in brand new segments that we haven't played in before. And so it's not going to happen overnight. It changes, but it allows our marketing group. It's very difficult for us to find enough money to advertise Genesis sedan and then Equus and then whatever we might have named this new product. Yeah. Now you've got an umbrella called Genesis, and it's got a lot of equity, and people understand that, and we'll use that and be able to use that umbrella to launch G90 and G80 and talk about more than one thing at a time. So we'll be able to leverage our marketing spend a lot more. But we have gone with our premium products models up to this point. We've had a regional approach. There's 10 markets nationally that represent about 60% of all the vehicles sold in those segments. And we've taken a regional approach. We've taken a cable approach where we've used Golf Channel a lot to get our story out. And if we want to roll a national brand out, we have to have national advertising. We have to be prepared to invest in that, and we are.
When do you hit that hockey stick? When you get all 6 products in?
No, it'll happen before there. We have some work to do with our dealer network before that happens. You'll start to see Genesis advertising this summer when the G90 is announced.
Because I got to tell you, at the Detroit Auto Show, I kept looking for the Hyundai stand. Because all I saw was Genesis.
Yeah.
It was at least during the media days. Then for the public days, it reverted back to Hyundai.
That was the quickest transition you'll ever see as we went from the Genesis stand to the Hyundai stand. But no, we are not going to become. This is a tough business. The premium business is a very difficult business, and we've got great product. We still are competing against very, very prestigious and proven brands in those segments. We spent the better part of 7 years already selling to those owners, so we know what they want and what their expectations are. And this is a natural evolution for us as we expand our lineup. Very difficult to expand that lineup and try to do it within the Hyundai family showroom. It's just almost impossible. Mm-hmm. So this is a natural step, we think, and we're just not going to hurry it. I think the first big manifestation that you'll see of the brand is these incremental products that start coming out. Because right now we'll start building the brand, we'll start building the network, and then we've got the incremental products that sort of deliver at home. So it's over the next 1 to 2 years, you're going to definitely see a Genesis presence exerting itself.
So you guys have a big challenge this year, I mean, with the iconic products coming out, which are new to the Hyundai notion.
If you think about it, we've always underperformed in the CUV segments in terms of representation. And they've been great products. We just haven't had enough of them. And now we're going to build 100,000 more of those. So we got to get people to realize that we're a brand that sells a great lineup of CUVs. That's
right.
Number one. And then we're rolling out a premium brand nationally. And we got people to think, you need to think about Hyundai when you're thinking about a premium car purchase. And then we need to become known as the alternative fuel place, too, to stop. So, Dean Evans, our new CMO, has got, he understands there's not enough dollars in the world for anybody to try to do this individually. You've got to create these halos, and Genesis allows us to create a halo for all of the Genesis vehicles, and we'll have a halo for our crossover vehicles, and we'll talk about a family of vehicles, and we'll do the same thing for Ioniq. So I think that's really important that we stay targeted, that we stay on strategy. But you're right. There's an awful lot of work to be done.
And then you
got to
sell Elantras too.
We do. We do.
You can't forget what you already have in the showroom.
That's
for sure.
Yeah, those are the ones that brought us to the dance.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Dave, what do you make of all this talk in the industry right now of mobility services, car sharing, ride sharing? Just in the month of January of 2016, it's amazing how this has just exploded on the scene. We're seeing big companies like GM and Ford make big bets on the table. What's the thinking at Hyundai about all
this? We're making big bets as well. We haven't made as big a splashes about it, but we're looking. To be honest with you, everybody is trying to figure out where this all shakes out. Mm-hmm. And my personal belief is there is definitely going to be a sector in the industry for car sharing. Is it commercial or is it retail? Does it? We have a lot of the companies are trying to get upstream in the OEMs and try to get their black box materials built in to improve their efficiencies. And so there's a lot of conversations going on beyond, with all the OEMs and all the folks getting into that business. It will change the market for sure. Right now, my personal gut feel is that it becomes almost a commercial segment, not retail, pure retail, not fleet, but almost a commercial segment that there's another niche there that didn't used to exist. We look at San Francisco, and I don't remember the revenues for sure, but the taxi business used to be $500 million in San Francisco. Then Uber came in, and the taxi business went down to about $200 million. But the total Uber and taxi business went from $500 million to about $700 million.
Wow.
So it created a new market, a new niche. And I sort of see that's where this is going, is there's going to be a new niche. It's not going to be huge. Maybe it's 20% of the market. And that will have an overall impact on the number of... I'm probably more on the conservative side in terms of industry forecasts, because I see this change in the way Gen Y in particular may buy cars in the future.
Or not buy them.
They're not as willing to invest in something that 90% of the time is not being used, and it's depreciating 100% of the time, and it's just they'll look at it a little bit differently than we did growing up. That being said, I don't think that you're not. I think you'll have fewer multiple vehicle households, mm-hmm. but you'll still have obviously households. But vehicles, and this is part of the move to crossover, is the ability to be versatile, to be able to haul people and to haul other things, and to be fuel efficient and to be stylish. That's why crossovers is big now, because it allows you to have one vehicle that covers a lot of the needs in a household. And I think that's what's driving a lot of that trend.
So, do you see mobility services as an appropriate place for OEMs, or do you think that it is by a service company that an OEM would support?
At the end of the day, I see it as an appropriate place for the OEM and the services companies providing the software, if you will, that allows that to happen. But a lot of these folks that are talking about it are used to businesses that have fairly large margins. The automobile business is not known for its high margins.
Right. And it takes a lot of capital, by the way.
They think they may want to manufacture cars, but when they get into it, they're going to find out they don't want to manufacture cars. So I think it's a marriage between the two. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the day, we've done this for 100 years. We do this pretty well.
Uh-huh.
They do what they do really, really well. So there is a marriage there, but ultimately, I see it as the role of the OEM. Mm-hmm.
So within Hyundai, is it Is all this talk of mobility happening more in the U.S. or more in Korea?
Korea's taken most of the lead on this, to be honest with you. And obviously we're following their lead and developing new technologies. But most of the news you read on this at Hyundai has a Seoul byline
right now. And so has Uber come to talk to you guys?
We've talked to Uber, yeah. Yeah. They've got a very interesting business model. The very interesting thing about Uber is I think about 90% of their operating costs are with the driver.
Yeah.
So they're very interested in autonomous
driving.
Then their margins go up tremendously. So, but yeah, I think all of these companies are looking for relationships with OEMs upstream to get their technology built into the cars at the OEM level versus adding it on after the fact. So there's a lot of conversations.
So Uber's all about ride sharing, you know, the car sharing, more like Zipcar.
Right.
That something that you guys would be interested in?
It's something we're looking at for sure. Yeah, there's not a stone that we've left unturned in that area. We're trying to evaluate where the real growth is, where there is stake and where there is substance. And there's a lot of sizzle around some of these things that sound really, really cool until you look into them and you go, I don't know how that's ever going to pencil. It's just not a viable model. But for sure, the world that as we know it is absolutely changing. And if we don't get in front of it and embrace that change, if we try to resist that change, we're going to get left behind.
What do your dealers say about this?
They're scared of it. You know, because they've grown up in a model that there's two things that are changing. Obviously, that piece of it is changing, and the other piece of it is consumer behavior is changing. So the way they've sold cars for 50 years is not the way. There's 80 million Gen Yers that are out there, and about 65% of them are going to be buying a car in the next 5 years, either new or used. It's a huge number, and they don't shop, and they don't buy the same way as their predecessing generations did. And we are working, I think every OEM is working really closely, trying to come up with net pricing ideas. And because they just aren't going to spend, they'll spend 10 hours online shopping. They are so much better equipped by the time they go into a showroom. They don't want to go through the five-hour process in the showroom.
They want to buy online.
They want to go in. Yeah, they want to buy online, and e-contracting is coming, and that's happening. The way we look at it, they go into a dealership for one of three reasons. One, they want to test drive the vehicle. You can't do that online. You need to, and Porsche is building test drive centers and everything, but generally speaking, they'll go into a store to test drive a vehicle. And tell the dealers, if you guys don't have one of everything front-lined and washed and gassed and ready to go with a predetermined route, and then you're not appealing to what they want to do. Number two is they need a second level of information. They can get information, they can Google it, but all this technology is so complex now, they need somebody to help them go through that. And if you don't have a sales staff that's very well educated, that's trained on all the operating features of the car, that can show you how to map your navigation, that can show you how to use your voice activation, then again, you're not serving their needs. And the third piece is they want to develop a relationship. They want a smiling face in what can often be a really hostile environment, right? So they want to come into the store. They want to build a relationship. They want to get more product information. They want to test drive the vehicle. Then they want to get the hell out of there. I mean, they don't want to spend much more than an hour in there. Everybody uses an hour. I'm not sure if it can physically be done. But they don't want to spend all day in there because they spent, on average, 8 to 10 hours online shopping. And in many cases, they know more than the salesperson. And they know what the average transaction prices are. And they know what their used vehicle is worth. And they know what all the programs are, 0.9% financing, 1.99 leasing. And if they go in there and the dealer tries to pull all his old tricks, like under-allowing on their trade or putting a supplemental sticker on the window, they're going to leave. They're going to get frustrated and leave, and you're never going to see them again. Mm-hmm. And that's the training process that we're going through. And it's not just premium brands. It's every brand. Everybody is up against the same thing. So whole new world from a consumer standpoint, and I think it's going to be good for the business because ours is one of the few businesses that still has high discounts and over-allowing. I mean, it's a fading phenomenon. It just doesn't happen much anymore. It still happens in automotive, and consumers are still buying vehicles that way. I mean, baby boomers are still the biggest generational cohort that buys vehicles. But by 2017, we're not very far away from that. It's going to be Gen Y.
No kidding.
It's going to be Gen Y.
So
is this
why you guys have taken leadership, I think, in terms of Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, that you're recognizing this new generation?
We think that fits our brand. We love this whole concept of democratization of technology. So a year and a half ago, we introduced the new Genesis in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I can remember standing up talking about segment first and Hyundai first on, in terms of safety, lane departure, emergency automatic emergency braking, all that. This was a year and a half ago. And then we went last summer to Minneapolis with Tucson, compact segment, same technology on Tucson. And now, tomorrow, we're going to talk about Elantra, and it's going to have a lot of that same technology in a compact car segment.
Yeah.
So we've taken what used to be the domain of premium cars, luxury cars, and now you get it in an entry-level compact car. So that's changing. We think that's uniquely fits us as a challenger brand that wants to surprise people and do something that you're not expecting. You know, be a not an and-or brand, but something that you don't have to make compromises on. You can get beautiful styling and great technology. You can get this and this. You don't have to make decisions between one or the other, and we think that fits us really well.
And a good value proposition.
Yeah, exactly. And it fits the Gen Y buyer too. We want to be ahead of that curve.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dave Zukowski, we could keep you here all week.
Yeah. Such a nice site. If it was raining, I would have been gone a long time ago.
So would we.
Yeah, that's right. But thanks so much for stopping by and talking all about what's happening at Hyundai. Really great talking.
Really enjoyed it. Great seeing you, John.
Cool.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Dave.
Nice to see you.
So we're going to be back in just a moment here, folks. We got a lot more to talk about at Hyundai. We're going to dive into more details on the Elantra here. But first, we're going to give a shout out to our friends at Bridgestone. Welcome back to Imperial Beach. No, this is not a great green screen behind us. This is the real thing. And joining us right now is Scott Margeson. He is the Director of Product Planning with Hyundai, and great to have you joining us here on Autoline After Hours.
Oh, it's great to be here in Imperial Beach on such a beautiful evening.
And with a beautiful car behind us here, too.
Absolutely, the all-new 2017 Elantra that we're introducing in the next couple days here.
Now, this isn't just a refresh. You're talking all-new here.
That's right, all-new sixth-generation vehicle. The last generation Elantra was a huge hit for us. And we're hoping to do even more with this one.
So it seems to me that the 2016 model Elantra is still a fairly modern car. How have you guys advanced to this new generation?
Right. So the last generation that's going out as a 2016 model year, you know, it was really advanced when it came out. And I think it's held up very well in terms of design. But, of course, we want to continue to evolve the vehicle, both in terms of design and in terms of other attributes like vehicle dynamics and technology. In fact, those were really the three key areas for us in terms of where do we take the Elantra, design and then...
Styling looks good, especially at front end.
Yeah, being a key one, vehicle dynamics, and then introducing new technology. That's really what we wanted to focus on with a new model.
What I find interesting, Scott, is this new 2-liter engine that you have in this thing. It's an Atkinson cycle. Now, that's not at all unusual to see in a hybrid vehicle, but to have it in a non-hybrid is something I didn't quite expect in this car.
Right. But the performance is excellent. It actually has a little more horsepower than the last generation 1.8-liter that we had standard before. But we also get better fuel economy as well. So...
And that's why you went to Atkinson, clearly, was for that fuel efficiency.
Absolutely.
And combined 33 miles to the gallon, is that right?
That's right. 29 city, 38 highway, and 33 combined.
But the 33 was with a manual transmission, right? Manual six-speed.
Right.
And
yeah.
you've also got a six-speed automatic, and what, it's within a mile or two per gallon?
That's right, yeah. And that six-speed automatic is new as well. So we had a six-speed automatic before, but the new one has a lot of improvements in it.
And there's another transmission now. Isn't there a dual clutch for this model as well?
That's right. So we're introducing now two powertrains. So the standard powertrain is the 2-liter Atkinson with a 6-speed automatic. And then we'll have an Eco model, which is a 1.4-liter turbo engine. And that engine has our 7-speed dual clutch transmission mated to it.
Right.
And I think, if I remember right, that's rated at 35 miles to the gallon.
Not official yet, but based on our internal estimates,
that's
our target, 35 mpg.
I find that such an interesting combination of an Atkinson 2-liter engine that has more horsepower than the 1.5 turbo, but the turbo has got more torque and, of course, the 7-speed transmission.
Right.
What's the thinking behind that kind of combination of engine, turbo, transmission, and all?
Right, exactly. So In the case of the 2-liter, we felt for that powertrain, the 6-speed automatic was the best fit for it with the Atkinson cycle. But in the case of the 1.4 Kappa, this is our eco model, so it's an eco-focused vehicle and has an eco-focused DCT. So you can have a dual-clutch transmission that's very performance-focused. In the case of the one that we applied here, it's very eco-focused, so it's a good fit with a 1.4.
Which one's faster, if we put a stopwatch to them?
You'll find out tomorrow.
Okay. So when you're doing the planning for this vehicle, and you know, you had this opportunity all new, which vehicles did you guys truly benchmark and say, we've got to beat them?
Right. Of course, you know, we're benchmarking other vehicles in the segment, the big powerhouses like, you know, like Civic and Corolla, and looking at vehicles that have a sporty reputation, like Mazda 3. Mm-hmm. But you know, we're planning this vehicle 4 years ago. So one of the dangers you can get to in benchmarking is you tend to look at what's in the market today, and that's very dangerous because you can end up with something that will not only be you know, probably not match what's going to be in the future, but you'll be significantly behind.
Right.
So we're not only looking at the vehicles in the compact segment, we're also looking at Accord and Camry and even BMW 3 Series and vehicles like that that are way out of the segment.
Yeah, so I saw Acura ILX and Audi A4 as being vehicles that you are comparing this to. And, I mean, how come?
Yeah, it's that idea of segment up or more than one segment up benchmarking. So typically, whether it's features, performance, you know, we all know how things are in the industry. Things trickle down. So if you look up above where you are now in the segment, you can expect in one generation many of those attributes, whether it's safety technology, expectations for vehicle dynamics, those are going to trickle down to the segment below. So you want to look at what your direct competition is doing, mm-hmm. and make sure that you're covering those bases. But at the same time, you want to look ahead, you want to look above, mm-hmm. Because that's where your segment's going to be come 4 years from now.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, one of the big stories on this car is the interior packaging, both passenger room and cargo room. And I think that's another reason why you're comparing it to these premium cars that one would think would be roomier inside, but yours stacks up awfully good.
Right, exactly. If you say Hyundai Elantra and Audi A4, most people would probably think, oh, the Audi's a premium vehicle, it must have a bigger, nicer interior. But we're actually bigger, we're actually big enough, like the last generation, where the vehicle's large enough to be considered a midsize car by the EPA in terms of the interior volume. So it's quite large inside, even though you look at the vehicle, very sleek, very dynamic profile.
And only marginally bigger than the preceding one.
Right, yeah, just a little less than an inch longer, inch wider. We wanted to do that to continue to have a good proportion. That's so important to design. That, in terms of some other packaging changes, we've been able to still have a great interior size.
So is packaging a key decision point for customers in this segment?
It is, and I think it's actually a strength of Hyundai, so I think we're in a good position to deliver on that. You know, one of the interesting things now about the compact segment is that it's not a segment where people are in because they're just settling for a smaller car when they'd really rather have a midsize car, they'd rather have a premium car. I think a lot of times that's the way we tend to think of the compact segment. But when you talk to consumers, it's really a place where they've intentionally landed there. They think it's the best place to be. They think it's an ideal in terms of size, fuel efficiency, maneuverability. You know, it's really become a great overall package. It's not just a practical vehicle anymore. You've got great design as well. So if you can also have an interior that's roomy enough to be able to, you know, do what people want to do on a day-to-day basis, then you've got a complete package.
You know, Gary and I are not just car enthusiasts. We're industry enthusiasts. We actually think manufacturing's cool. So one of the things that jumped out at me about the new Elantra is how much structural adhesive it uses, 40 times more than the outgoing model. And of course, I believe that's one of the key reasons why this thing has got good interior packaging and a lighter weight compared to the old model.
Yeah, absolutely. So the last generation Elantra used a little structural adhesives, about 10 feet. The new one uses 394 feet of
structural adhesive. Say those stats again.
That's right.
10 feet
to 394 feet. So an incredible difference in application of it. So it's obviously not just a incremental step up in terms of adhesives, but obviously, you know, in thinking of such a, you know, big change, it obviously means there was a big philosophical change as well in how you go about manufacturing the vehicle. Mm-hmm. So,
is this new Elantra kind of a leader for the company in that regard?
Yeah, I think so. One of the things that we like to refer to is the aircraft industry. So I think for some people, maybe using adhesives as a structural component in a thing like an automobile is unusual. People expect it to be welded together and riveted together. But if you look at the aircraft industry, now structural adhesives are a huge part. That's how you put together.
It's almost passe for them.
Exactly. So, and those are, you know, and you're relying on that technology, you know, for your safety when you're in the air. So the technology is well proven. And it's when you drive the vehicle, you can really feel the solidity in the vehicle because of that structural adhesive that's used.
Now, you mentioned that one of the key points on the development of this vehicle was the design, the styling. So the last generation had the fluidic sculptured design language. This one doesn't. Was that a deliberate move away from that?
So we still consider this to be fluidic sculpture. We call it fluidic sculpture 2.0.
Okay.
So it's an evolution of it. You know, we wanted to keep this sense. Fluidic sculpture was all about the vehicle feeling like it was having a sense of motion, being very dynamic. Again, whether you look at the Elantra, the Sonata, you were talking about a segment where the expectation was, you know, the compact segment, the expectation was very practical vehicle, very practical design. Maybe even the feeling that people don't want design. They just want a very practical vehicle. And I think we showed with last generation Elantra, with its fluidic sculpture, that's not the case. People want great design. Everybody wants a great-looking vehicle, not just a practical vehicle. But we want to evolve it as well. We thought there was also the opportunity to go to a little bit more sophistication, a little bit more refinement, but still keep the very dynamic quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and also, you know, a key part of that, as I mentioned, is not just the body surfacing, but also the proportion. So the proportion is such a huge part of vehicle design. Mm-hmm. So the little extra length that we have, the little extra width that we have, maintaining the other dimensions, really gives the new 2017 Elantra a really nice proportion.
Mm-hmm.
Fluidic sculpture 2.0, surfacing that you add to it, and we think it's a great design.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. Well, Scott, with that, we're going to wrap up this segment. Really want to thank you for stopping by and filling us in on details of the Elantra. We're going to talk with one of your other compadres here and get into yet even more details on the car. But thanks so much for stopping by.
It's a great being here, John.
Cool. And we'll be back right after this.
Whether it's on television, online, or through social media, AutoLine knows how to effectively get your marketing message to the people you want to reach. Contact Stacy Eamon today.
Joining us right now is Mike Evanoff. He's the manager of product planning at Hyundai. And Mike, thanks for sitting in on After Hours with Gary and I.
Yep. Thanks for having me. Always wanted to be on the show.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool. We've made your dream come true, and you've made ours.
Yep.
So, very interesting. Everything that you're doing with the new Elantra, mm-hmm. here, there's so many things that we could dive into here. One thing I've got a question for you, and I got to look this up. You've got this music system called Clarify,
right?
That says music restoration technology.
Yes.
What the heck does that mean?
Well, it's actually combined. We worked with our partner Harman, an Infiniti premium audio system. So Clarify is their technology that's integrated into the premium audio system in Elantra. And I think we've gotten so used to over the years compressed audio, even satellite radio experiences it a little bit at different rates. But, you know, with streaming and audio, the reproduction sometimes lacks. And, you know, the highs and the lows are just kind of gone from it. So what Clarify does, it basically analyzes that signal and tries to build in what's been taken out post-process, you know, wise. So it really, combine that with the premium audio system that has, you know, subwoofer and center channel, it really enhances that music experience.
So it's just a fuller, richer sound.
Yeah, it really, it you know, provides what the artist originally intended, which a lot of that detail gets lost, you know, through compression. You know, CD is still the best, one of the best, you know, reproductive medias, but now with USBs and MP3s and our smartphones, you know, we just want to bring that music level back up to what it should be and provide that whole audio experience.
Yeah, because when I saw music restoration technology, yeah. I thought, I got to ask them what the heck that means.
So,
yeah.
So music.
Yes.
And beyond that, the other technologies that you guys focused on, mm-hmm. and what do you feel are key aspects of the technology that you're bringing to this product?
Well, absolutely. There's a lot of technology is one of the main focuses. I know Scott talked about a lot of the engineering, a lot of the ride quality, NVH, and so forth. So that was a focus as well. But from a technology standpoint, a lot of technology that you wouldn't necessarily find in this segment, just not too long ago. I mean, I remember, you know, compact cars used to be just kind of that, compact, drive around, and that's it. And we kind of call it the democratization of features. So, you know, it's the steady migration of all these high technology features that migrate down into, you know, compact segment. So, and I think, you know, compacts of today are, you know, the proper size. It's, you know, it is, you know, classified by the EPA as a midsize. So it's a good size car, and you've got all this technology. The safety technology especially, you would never expect to see in, you know, in the segment not too long ago. Automatic emergency braking with pedestrian detection, you know, can...
I know, in a car like this, that blows my mind.
Right. And
it
does.
And
so explain what happens. I mean, it's you know, for people who are not familiar with this technology, explain what that means.
So, yeah, automatic emergency braking, basically, we have both a radar sensor in the front and also a camera mounted behind, you know, the rearview mirror area. So those two work in conjunction, which we call sensor fusion, to basically analyze always scanning out in front of you to what's, you know, what's ahead. And it'll first warn you if there's a collision imminent.
So what it'll do, will it beep?
There's a visual on the display. There's also an audio. And then it'll keep on kind of measuring that distance and going, okay, you better do something here quickly. And if you don't, you know, it'll give a little bit of brake pressure. And then depending on, once again, that closing distance, it could, you know, apply a full emergency braking.
So bring it to a full stop.
Bring it to a full stop.
No kidding.
So it's not, you know, you always got to pay attention when you're driving. I you know, the future is coming someday. And this is kind of a little glimpse of it. But I still like the fact that you can always, you know, take control of the vehicle.
Okay, what else has it got?
So it's also had, well, by using that sensor, it also allows it to have smart cruise control, another feature you would never expect in this segment. You can make, so it goes beyond traditional cruise control, and you can set between 1 and 4 distances between the car in front of you. You know, set your speed, and basically you never hit the brake or the gas until you drop below like 6 miles an hour. So if somebody pulls in front of you, it'll automatically brake and maintain that distance. They pull away, it'll accelerate back up to the speed. Combine that, also have lane keep assist system, which uses the camera now to detect lines in the road. And once it's detected, it kind of locks you into that lane. And if you start to deviate out, you know, one side or the other, first it'll warn you, it'll be an audible, it'll be a visual. And then if you don't make any correction, it'll actually apply a little steering torque and
nudge
you back right in line.
Okay, so. But you still have your hands on the wheel.
Correct. Absolutely.
You're not just...
Yeah, no, and if it senses the lines and you take your hands off because you think you can, it is kind of funny. You can kind of, like, go down the freeway. You can, you know...
Bounce off the line, so to speak.
A little bit here and there, depending how it's set up. But it'll notice that you have not put any steering input in for a certain amount of time. It'll warn you, you know, you need to get your hands back on the wheel.
How are you going to price this safety technology? Because this stuff is killer good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just heard a safety expert saying not enough people are ordering it.
Yeah, and it's definitely, you know, it's getting more and more popular as people become aware of it. It will be basically a standalone package on our top limited trim. Another safety technology, blind spot detection, which has been in the segment a little bit, but now even more so, it's a first for Elantra. That'll be on roughly, you know, it'll be at a lower price point, about half of it. Because in all of our research, whether it's our own proprietary or third-party research, when you tell them blind spot detection, and you give them a price, too, you got to give them, you know, to determine feature demand. You just can't say, I want everything without, you know, everything costs something. So you give them a price that's fair, and it is one of the top highest rated demand features, regardless of whether it's just, you know, as far as safety technology, it is the highest. But if you look at all the features, whether it be the infotainment or other features, it still always ranks up there in the top.
Yeah, see, nobody can adjust their mirrors. I just love it.
You do start to get used to it.
It's great stuff.
So what are you talking about? $1,000 for the whole safety package,
just under two for the, but that has HID headlights as well with dynamic bending. That has the emergency brake. tracking that has the smart cruise control, that has the lane keep assist. It also has integrated memory system, which is also a segment first. It not only remembers the two positions for the driver's seat, but also the outside exterior mirrors as well, which is very helpful. So that's all on what we call the ultimate package. So that is basically fully loaded.
Gotcha.
So HID with dynamic bending, what does that mean?
So as basically tied to the steering input, so as you give a little bit of input, at speeds over 25 miles an hour, you will see the headlights, you know, correct a little bit as you steer into a turn.
Which, just again, for an Elantra is incredible. I mean, you know, you're literally talking about stuff that maybe 5 years ago, all the safety stuff and all that.
Premium high-end. So we're happy to have it down on Elantra, which is a vitally important car for us. It was like 32% of our sales last year, 31% the year before.
Wow.
It's very cool to have all this, you know, content features on Elantra now.
I was also impressed to see the coefficient of drag. You guys are claiming 0.027.
Correct.
I'd like to see if that would work in every wind tunnel, because that's a hell of a low number.
Yeah, absolutely. And it beats the outgoing car, which was 0.28. You know, you look at the profile, it is a very sleek car. And I use the word sleek because in all of our research, that's the word that came up the most. But there's items like, you know, in the front fascia, there's actually what we call an air curtain. It's a functional item.
These are the shutters that open and close?
They are open basically all the time.
Okay.
So they're right aft of the LED DRLs in the fascia itself, and they just allow air to flow through the fascia and kind of, you know, because around the wheelhouse area in the front can be kind of a turbulent area, so that helps minimize and increase efficiency.
It exhausts the air out by the wheel well?
Yeah, so in the back side of the wheel well, you'll actually see it actually come out. And anything that's functional, I'm a fan for. Absolutely, you know, because it's got to have function. And just other little things, even the styling of the rear deck lid has a little bit of an integrated kick-up. It almost looks like it has an integrated lip spoiler. At the bottom portion of the fascia, there's a little bit of a lip there, too, as well. Undercovers underneath. So everything focuses to maximize that aero efficiency.
So the aero gain is contributing to the miles per gallon that this...
Yes. So now the Elantra SE is now 33 combined. So that is an increase of one from the outgoing model. So that, and the car is a little bigger too. So everything works in conjunction to help, you know, maximize efficiency.
And how does that play with the competitive set?
Competitive set is very competitive. It's very right in the middle there. Right.
Cool. So, and how many different trim levels on this car?
So at launch, SE and Limited. SE being the core, Limited being the little bit more premium, you know, leather standard there, power seat standard there. We also have an eco trim, I think Scott talked about, with the 1.4 turbo GDI engine with the 7-speed dual clutch. That'll be coming out in the second quarter, so in a few months, that trim will be coming out as well. And we made a little bit of announcement at LA when we revealed the car, but there might be an additional trim that I will be showing pictures of tomorrow, but something a little sportier.
Yeah, I was just going to say, sportier would sound like something to fit into the lineup.
Yeah, and with Elantra being a mainstream compact car, when you're tuning it and developing it, you know, you got to take that buyer into consideration. And there was, you know, 2.2 million sold last year. So you don't want to deviate too far, you know, one direction. You want to just, you know, hit that buyer square. Whereas the sport derivative gives us an opportunity to go after that sporty buyer. Typically is a little bit more male, typically is a little bit younger based on, you know, the research and some of the other vehicles out there in the set. But looking forward to that one a lot.
And so with freight, you know, delivery charges, we're looking at what, just under $18,000?
So yeah, $17,150 before freight. So just, you know, just under $18 with freight. The automatic SE before freight is $18,150. So that is $100 less than the outgoing model.
And which is full bow, fully loaded, everything thrown on, 26, 27.
Yeah, just under 27 more so with freight.
Mm-hmm. So is this loaded version more loaded than the
Loaded baked potato
you get last time?
Yes, yes. So you'll see a lot of these
it's
features.
It's that democratization, baby.
Features, yes. So a lot more available on Elantra for 17 model year.
Cool. Mark, we're going to have to wrap this up. We're losing sunshine. The sun is setting here, but it's beautiful. Thanks so much for stopping by. It's been really cool having you here on AutoLine After Hours.
Right. Thank you for having me.
Good.
I appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you.
More to come. We'll be back right after this. You already know that you can listen to AutoLine's Industry Insight in places like YouTube and Stitcher, but did you know that you can also listen to it live in your car? It's simple. Just pair your smartphone with your vehicle's Bluetooth connection or plug into the aux jack. Then navigate to AutoLine.tv using your phone's browser. Find the show you want to hear and click play, just like you would on your computer.
This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy.
It's that easy. Never be disconnected from Autoline's top-notch insider information with Autoline on the go.
Well, we're back with some closing thoughts here. What's your overall impression, Gary? What do you think? These guys on the right track with the right car?
I think that, you know, if you look at where the Elantra is in the Hyundai lineup, it's, you know, by far their biggest selling car. And I think that, you know, one of the things we didn't get into is I believe this is a global product. And because it's global engineering, they're able to amortize the costs across a broad base, right? And so you're able to get that democratization of technology and democratization of adhesives and democratization of ultra-high strength steel and on and on and on. So, I mean, they're able to put together one hell of a package at a good price.
Yeah, no, that's the impressive thing, you know, where they price this thing. And they're not the only ones by any stretch, but of getting all this technology down into literally entry-level cars. Right. I'm just blown away that the industry is moving this fast and doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the electronics in particular, I mean, to have adaptive cruise control on a compact car, I mean, I wouldn't have thought of that was going to be happening. I mean, just unbelievable.
And also, very interesting talking with Zukowski. I love listening to the guy because he really just lays it out there as he sees it. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't try to color it up or, you know, make it sound better than it is. He just lays it right out there.
But, you know, you got to think, I mean, what a tremendous challenge they're taking on this year with, you know, Genesis being sort of on its own, but not exactly on its own. The new iconic vehicles that they're coming out with. I mean, man, what a challenge that's going to be to go to the market and say, hey, you know, we're Hyundai. We have these luxury cars. And, oh, by the way, now we have these most advanced technology vehicles.
Yes, that's fine. You know, all you have to do is tell the bosses in Korea, just give us a ton more advertising money. We'll make it all happen.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be easy.
Real good. Well, we ought to wrap this up. But this has been kind of cool out here, doing it right down by the beach and having full access to these Hyundai executives to talk about the new Elantra.
But next week, back in the studio?
Back in the studio. We got to tell everybody we're going to have Bob Lutz with us in the studio next week. We're going to be talking about his newest car venture. And I know it's not going to stop there. I know he's got a million opinions about everything else going on in the industry. And we'll get into that.
Absolutely.
Too. Well, good. Well, Gary and John, signing off from the sands of Imperial Beach. We'll see you next week.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires. Your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There is all that and much more at autoline.tv.